Hey, Jeff, we're back.
Hey, Steve, 4 weeks in a row.
I mean, conceivably. I mean, that means we would actually have to get this up by next week.
Well, sure, sure. But 4 weeks in a row to do the overscan.
That's
in
right.
The boardroom.
Okay. Oh, I thought we were gonna. I thought we were gonna get rid of the boardroom thing.
I don't know. It's still on there.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
This is gonna be an ongoing joke, Steve, forever.
I realize. Into the vertical line. Generation Atari. Into the vertical blend. Generation Atari.
Anyway,
okay. Jeff, here we are.
What's going on, Steve?
We're in the boardroom.
We're in the boardroom, and we're doing the overscan.
We are for like one day, I'm like, let's drop the overscan. And then we're like, no, let's just keep the overscan.
Let's just keep it.
Yeah.
So 4 weeks in a row, we are attempting to do the overscan.
I actually can't believe it. But I think with one of us doing, we alternate weeks to editing, I think that works really well.
Yeah, that works. Editing and yeah, it's, I think this is a good way to go about it.
Okay. Out of the boardroom and into Atari news.
Atari news. I had to find some old news, but
yeah.
I still like this news.
So what's your Atari news here, Jeff?
So I am not a huge Roller Coaster Tycoon game fan, but I know
you're
you
wrong.
Are. I'm not?
No, you're wrong. Roller Coaster Tycoon is amazing.
I know. Well, I just never played it very much, but I knew you were.
Oh, yes.
And I saw that the anniversary that is Roller Coaster Tycoon anniversary is available. It's on the front of the Atari site. And there are a bunch of Roller Coaster Tycoon games that can be played. And I figured since it is the anniversary, we might as well talk about just really quickly.
I have this weird memory. So let's talk about this. I have this weird memory of playing the original Roller Coaster Tycoon. Let's say I am a huge fan of Roller Coaster Tycoon. I am a huge fan of Chris Sawyer, the guy who made Roller Coaster Tycoon, basically on his own. He did have a guy draw graphics for him, but basically programmed the first two games in assembly language on his own, on the PC. Incredible games, just like some of the best games ever. Also sold really, really well. We're on like the top 10 charts forever, but not really like well known or respected as like this top selling game. The reason
because it was PC only for a while. That's why.
Well, I think the actual reason. Well, that's true, but I think the reason is that The Sims came out a couple years later and sort of took up that mantle as like the this kind of game. Okay, so first you've got Theme Park by Bullfrog, which Chris Sawyer sort of was inspired by, but combined with Transport Tycoon to make Roller Coaster Tycoon. And it came out in 1999. This is why this is the 25th anniversary. But I have an absolute memory of playing Roller Coaster Tycoon the day after I came home from Roshi being born, which is 1998. So I don't know what that memory is. It's implanted somehow in me that
so
I played.
Maybe it came on a demo disc on a with a magazine.
It wasn't. It was the real game. I bought the real game at the store. So
it didn't come with a video card?
I don't know. But here's Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 and Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 are made by Chris Sawyer, mostly programmed by him. I think 100% programmed by him. He might have had some help, and then he had someone do the graphics. And then there's also some add-on packs and stuff. There's also Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, which came out when Atari bought, when Infogrames bought Atari and they got Microprose, and Microprose owned Roller Coaster Tycoon. That's why Atari owns Roller Coaster Tycoon. That was developed by Chris Sawyer and Frontier Entertainment, and then this because Frontier did most of the work because it was a three game in 3D. So Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 and all of its add-on packs and stuff is a really well respected, really good game that people love. But it's old. I mean, it's 20 years old now, right? Even more, 21 years old. But Chris, that was the end of Chris Sawyer's involvement with Roller Coaster Tycoon. Frontier kept working on Roller Coaster Tycoon until something happened, and Atari split off and has done all this other stuff, Adventures and Touch, and I don't know any of that, because to me, non-canon Roller Coaster Tycoon. The only canon Roller Coaster Tycoon after Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is actually Planet Coaster, which is not Roller Coaster Tycoon, but it's made by Frontier Entertainment, the same people who made Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. So just so you know, the lineage goes Transport Tycoon, Roller Coaster Tycoon 1, Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, kind of, and but then Frontier, and then Planet Coaster. That's, if you're a real Roller Coaster Tycoon fan, to me, that's the path you've gone. I mean, you can be a fan with that, but I'm just saying, that's my path.
So I just wanted to say about this, that they do have their Adventures and the Touch version, but the classic version available for Apple and Steam and Google Play. But what else is available on the Atari site is like shirts and tote bags and all this stuff. And I wanted to get a memory from you, or see if you remember like in junior high school when they made us sell candy for some reason and you could win prizes.
We had to sell magazine subscriptions.
Or whatever it was, that's the same stuff that Atari has for sale for Roller Coaster Tycoon there. Like, it's just like the same stuff you could win if you sold a bunch of magazine subscriptions for the school.
So I think, I don't know if they still do this. I think they did it when one of my kids was little. But in America, for people who aren't in America, I don't know if they do this in UK.
The United States of America, because America be North or South or Central.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. In the USA, we had it in junior high, but maybe I think it also happened in like elementary school now. They would have one day during the year, they would have these really hip college kids show up on campus. Right. And the hip college kids, we would have an assembly, and they'd tell us all about all the prizes we would win that week. I think it lasted for 1 week or 2 weeks if we sold magazine subscriptions. Then this whole system where you had the book for magazine subscriptions and you go sell the subscriptions and you come in every day. And if you sold one, you'd get like a lollipop or you get a chance to win something. If you sold five, you get something else. You sold 10, you get something else. And then like the grand prize winner for the day and the grand prize winner for the 2 weeks would get a bike or, Atari, I don't know, whatever. But it was a total like bizarre like corporate like child labor to sell to get us to go out to like go door to door and sell these magazines. And when I think back and I'm like, what the hell were they thinking?
Right. Exactly. I remember that we never really sold any door to door. Mom would buy like a couple of magazines
and
that
was it. Mom would make sure it was fair. She'd buy like TV Guide from me and Games magazine from you or something. And maybe Dad would buy Dirt Bike or something, but all right, we need to go on. We spent too much time on this, but it's cool. Roller Coaster Tycoon Anniversary, you can get the first two games, which are really the best canon games, and the three is good too, but it's the 3D game. The 2D games made by Chris Sawyer are really the best. AtariAge.com.
AtariAge.com.
So what did we find at AtariAge? I found
this was yours this time.
Yes. Yeah, so Kay Savitz put up this link to a game called Titant, an unpublished analog software disc courtesy of Lee Pappas, dumped by Kay Savitz. So it's a playable game that was going to come out on analog and never was. I haven't tried it yet, but it looked pretty cool. And this is part of these 8-Bit Software Preservation Initiative by Kay and all the fine people at the Antic podcast. So I just want to say, like, this looked really neat to me when it came up, but I don't know that much more. I didn't spend any time looking at it, so I kind of failed in my approach.
You know what? I hope it shows up on a Homesoft disc soon, because I do want to go through a latest Homesoft disc for one of my videos. And if it's there, then I'll go through it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you look at the latest one. All right. Next up, the book club. Already to book club. Okay,
book club.
Let's talk about book club. This week's book, and we actually got some people telling us in the comments that they bought the books that we talked about 2 weeks ago. So that's pretty cool.
You know what?
Well, here's the book club for this week. It is, why don't you say what it is?
Hackers, Heroes of the Computer Revolution, 25th Anniversary Edition. The reason I picked the 25th Anniversary Edition, which came out a while ago, it was like in 2000 or something, 2005, was because there's some extra stuff in it, and on Audible, I think you can listen to the extra stuff. But what it is a book that came out in 1990. It's a book by Stephen Levy, and it's an absolute classic on the actual first couple decades of personal computers and by and using personal in quotes. It starts out as three main parts. It starts out with the MIT hackers who created Space War, and then it moves on in the second part to the 70s. That's the 60s. To the 70s, it's got the Altair, the homebrew computer club, early Apple and Microsoft. It even talks about Bill Gates making BASIC and trying to sell it back to them and the backlash. And then it moves on to the third part to something that could be really cool for Atari fans, especially Atari 8-bit fans. They have a whole section on Sierra Online, and where John Harris, a developer who loved the Atari 8-bit computers, is basically making his games for the Atari 8-bit, his Frogger and his other games. I think he made Jawbreaker, and I think he started a couple others but lost the source code. But it's a complete classic, and it should be read or listened to by anyone who's interested in retro computers or even retro games.
So I like that we made this one second, because I think after we read The Cuckoo's Egg, I think we were out looking for books about hackers.
Hackers.
And we found this, which is not about the hackers like in The Cuckoo's Egg. It's really about the real traditional hackers. And I don't know if the stories now have all the information in them. Probably the Space War story probably could use, you know, there's probably an update, you know, probably on They Create Worlds probably has updated this. But the actual writing and these stories that he tells in this book are absolutely fantastic. It's some of the first writing about video games and the computer era in this way, and it's really, really fascinating to read it, but also it's really entertaining. I want to say about the last story with John Harris, which is great. There is another person highlighted but not mentioned in the book.
You're right.
Peter Oliphant. So he's a character in that book. He's a guy who moves from Mattel Electronics to go work at Sierra, and he made he made Mr. Cool, and I think that's the game. And Peter had worked on the Dungeons and Dragons handheld game for the electronic game when he was working at Mattel Electronics, and Peter, yes. Is sort of a hidden hero in that story. Peter Oliphant was at least I considered him a friend, and it's really sad that he passed away. But he is in this book, so I think we will cover Peter Oliphant in a future version of this podcast, because I really want to talk about him. But anyway, Hackers is an amazing book. After you finish The Cuckoo's Egg, but before you read, Silicon Snake Oil, I'd read this book.
Yeah, it's a good one. Okay. Move on. Next.
Next up, Excitement of the Week. Scald is out, Jeff. Scald against the Black Priory came out. They actually, I told them on Twitter, I said, hey, they said, does anybody want a code? And I specifically said, I do not want a code. I want to buy this game when it comes out on the first day because it looks so good. Here, I'll just, but then
I want a code. I know you got me a code.
But then they gave me one anyway. They said, no, we kind of like the idea. They said, hey, your podcast is perfect for this. Why don't you go get a code? And so they gave me a code to play it. I really like it, but I did buy it today and I sent it to you. So Jeff has a copy as well.
Thank you for buying it and giving me your copy. Now you're going to play the Scald.
We'll just say again, this is a role-playing game for the PC. In Steam, maybe it comes Mac, I'm not really sure. But it's in the vein of Ultima 7 or kind of like a Baldur's Gate, but I think it's more like Ultima 7 work. But it's a combination of the two. Set, I think, in sort of a Cthulhu-like or horror kind of Cthulhu setting. But the sounds are amazing. Sounds like an ad-lib sound. The graphics are cute, but they look period perfect. even though it's a new game. And it's getting really great reviews, too. Except the designer said on Twitter, he's like, wow, those people on, everyone on Discord is really nice, but I go to YouTube and everybody's a dick. I'm like, yeah, welcome to YouTube.
Yep. Well, okay, not everybody, but there are jerks on YouTube.
He got a lot of people saying, oh, the graphics suck. It's like, but that's the point. Like,
right.
But there was a Kickstarter for this and stuff, too. So I think people who like it already know what it is. But now I've got a surprise for you, Jeff. I have another surprise of the week. Let me go get it, okay?
Ooh, this sounds interesting.
Okay, can you see this?
I can see it. I'm intrigued.
Okay, so I bought something on eBay, and I want to show you what it is. This is the opening of the week, which maybe we'll do. Maybe you'll start buying stuff when you can again. But for now, I will open something.
Wait, let me say one thing. I have a bunch of stuff to open. So we can do
that's great. So let me just take a guess to see what you think this is.
Well, it's from Amazon. Is that what it says?
It's not from Amazon.
It looks like
it's
an Amazon
just
pack.
It's just in an Amazon.
Then I have a zero idea what it could be. Zero. None.
Okay. So this is a surprise. Do you want me to open it?
Oh, yeah.
Can you see it?
I can see it. Pull it up a little higher. A little higher. Okay. Gotta go higher.
Higher?
There you are. That way everyone can see it.
So this is something I bought. This is something I've wanted for a long time, but I finally bought on eBay. I'll show you what it is.
Us eBay sellers all use those bags from Amazon. Go. Looks like something from EA.
Yep.
Oh, it is!
It is.
Sorry.
This is kind of tough. It is. I don't like the way it was packaged, actually, but that's okay. It's fine. Because it's hard to get off, and I don't want to break it. It is Seven Cities of Gold.
For the Atari 8-bit?
For the Atari 8-bit, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Got a disc inside. Let's make sure.
Oh, wow.
It's got the instruction book. I think it does. Yep. Seven Cities of Gold instruction. It might be missing something, but anyway.
I like it.
I like it too. So that's my opening of.
That's fantastic.
I wanted this forever, and this only cost me like $20 or something. So I don't understand why these large card arts games don't go for more. But I'm happy that it has a disc.
Oh my gosh! So Seven Cities of Gold. People don't know how great that game is.
Yeah.
So Pete Davison on Twitter and YouTube knows. He's an ST Atari, a big guy.
His
brother wrote for all the Page Six magazines.
Oh, cool.
All
right, let's go.
Okay, so I like the surprise opening. What is next?
Feedback.
It's the feedback. This is my voice for Morning Zoo. Feedback. Okay, so that's the bad radio shows, Morning Zoo. Okay, feedback. So. In our last episode, we showed Laurent's video in French about the Atari 8-bit, and he came back and just want to say hello. I saw the podcast. Very cool. By the way, technically, I'm French-American. Even though I was born and raised en français, I've been living in the U.S. for over 20 years now. Best, Laurent. I just want to say he really appreciated us showing his thing, and I think people should still go check out his video.
Cool.
On the Atari 8-bit.
That's a good response.
Yeah.
Next one.
Here's a double response from the last podcast. Atari Legend, three times a charm. This is because we got three episodes out in a row. My favorite on YouTube. Great work, guys. Yes, Atari should own all retro, and they need to remake the oldest games. Give them the recharge treatment. I think it means the oldest arcade games. And then Sabretooth Retro, another, besides Atari Legend, another person I'm a huge fan of, says, I'm really enjoying the overscan format. Fantastic stuff. Just a note that Neo Sprint was released to early access on the modern Atari VCS last October. He's got other stuff in there too, but that's what I want to say. Like, so I don't have a VCS. But also, he said, you can use the spinner in Food Fight, combat, you can use the spinner control.
Oh, that's the 3D game, the 3D one that's on the Atari VCS.
Atari should definitely own Golden Era Retro. Match the excellent vector monitor emulation of VCTR, SCTR with the Vectrex retrospective,
Sector,
and right? You have a winner.
You know that game is, right? That's Vector Sector.
Vector Sector.
From Atari 50.
Vector Sector. Oh my gosh, that is awesome. He's right.
So I'm going to
Vector Sector emulation with a Vectrex. Oh, wow.
I just want to say that these two guys don't know how close we were to not doing this podcast anymore and not naming it Overscan before we got these two pieces of feedback.
We're like, let's just keep doing correct. It. I think actually yesterday it was, let's get rid of the Overscan name and maybe do this once a month. And we got the two messages wrong. No, we'll keep going. Like, that's all it takes. Like,
that's all it took. We are so thin.
We're so close. Well, it's also just a lot of work, you know, but I love it. So, and it gets me to actually get to talk to you on video for an hour a week.
That's right. That's the whole thing. We get to talk for an hour a week or so.
For an hour a week actually, about cool new stuff.
Or another hour if we mess it up and have to redo it.
Yeah, or another hour. And then an hour of back and forth yelling at each other about how bad our video was so that we can have to redo it. Okay, let's move on. So what is next?
Okay, Creator Spotlight. Will it be this time? Who will it be this time, Jeff? The Creator Spotlight. Do you know who this is?
I know who it is.
It is Dino Deeney!
Dino Deeney of Kickoff 2, Kickoff, Goal, and other stuff.
And Trivia Trove. I think that's the first game he made. My guess is Trivia Trove is his first game. Dino Deeney, maker of the world's best soccer games that aren't Sensible Soccer, except I think that his Goal's just as good.
But. You know, Sensible is a cartoonish version of. I don't mean bad. I mean they're much easier to control, much more fun. But the realism in quotes. I know it's hard to talk about realism when you have a 2D overhead, tiny little guy soccer. But the realism of Kickoff is different than Sensible. Like, they're not the same. Yes, they're both overhead, tiny little figures, but like, Sensible's cartoony and fun, and you can score more goals. And Kickoff is like for the robust human.
But I mean, you have to admit, so I was playing FIFA, but I don't play it anymore because I realized it's broken. But,
right.
But before the career mode in FIFA, the most amazing career mode you could play in any game was the one I consider Player Manager to be the most amazing soccer career mode ever, where
actually,
you managed the team, you played it.
Mm-hmm. There is a guy who made something called New Star Soccer,
right. Yes.
Who was on the Amiga. He started writing it in Blitz Basic on the Amiga, then in the early 2000s, transferred over to doing it on the PC and Mac. And it was an incredible game based on Kickoff 2 and Sensible, an incredible game. You can only play a mobile version now, but that game is incredible. So between those two, between Kickoff Player Manager and the career mode in the EA games, you have New Star Soccer, and that's a great one to look up.
This isn't what I want to talk about, though.
I know.
Dino Deeney, a couple of years ago, created a podcast.
Oh my lord! Oh yes!
The Moths
of
Programming with Dino Deeney, and there's only 10 episodes.
It's incredible.
And each one kind of takes an idea, like some sort of established, thing that's just
idea.
A default in programming, like don't use go-tos and stuff like that. And he kind of turns it on his head. Sometimes he agrees, sometimes he doesn't. But it's freaking Dino Deeney, and
it's Dino Deeney. It's awesome.
10 slices of just how his mind works. And again, the last one was a year and a half ago or so. I think that it's really hard. I'm the only person that has reviewed it on here. Like I said,
really?
All five stars.
I've listened to all of them.
It was me. I was the only guy who did it.
Oh, we got to get more people out there. Listen,
that's what I mean.
It's an incredible podcast.
It's great. It's incredible just because you're hearing from Dino Deeney. Right. And I think that this is if people want to get any insight into Dino Deeney, how he thinks, what his programming style and stuff like that, this is a hidden gem. This is what the Overscan is for. This is something that fell outside the edges, and we're bringing it in out of the Overscan and into the vertical blank, Jeff. Out of the Overscan.
Out of the Overscan and into the vertical blank.
Out of the Overscan and into the vertical blank goes the
Moths. This is the thing about this. This is so good. The one about Goto is hilarious because it's like, well, in every programming you do use Goto. Besides that, he's worked in a lot of these functional programming environments where he's like, yeah, you don't need all that. Anyway, it's great. It's great. I mean, it's a fantastic, fantastic podcast.
So Dino Dean's games are great, but this podcast is really interesting, and I would check it out if you could.
Yes,
okay.
That's fantastic.
And finally, this week's boardroom debate is not really a debate at all. I just put it in here because this is the last slide in our PowerPoint.
Sure.
We're going to talk about from ST to PC, or the day we transformed our Atari ST into 286 PC using AT speed. So right now, Jeff, we're going to go through a time machine.
Yes.
And we're going back, like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago to something we recorded
three weeks ago. We're going to play
recording. Yeah. Hey, Jeff.
Hey,
I got
Steve.
An idea.
What do you want to do?
I got an idea, Jeff, on this beautiful, I don't know, kind of gloomy Friday afternoon in May.
May 3rd.
May. It's May 2024. Let's time travel a good 33 years ago to May 1991. Do you remember what computer we owned in May 1991?
We had an Atari 1040 ST.
We had an Atari 1040 ST, that's right. And what was the best thing about the Atari 1040 ST?
Games.
And what was the worst thing about the Atari 1040 ST?
Not being able to find games in the USA.
In May, which is really April, May, the last issue of Start magazine came out.
Right.
For the Atari ST, which was related to Antic, which Antic was the Atari 8-bit magazine, and then they made Start the ST version of Antic. And I thought it'd be fun just to really quickly show what games were available in the USA magazines at the time, as opposed to what was in the UK. We all know it was the UK. The magazines are filled with games. So what do we have in the USA?
Let's go really quick through. Let me share that. Let me go to window capture. So here is, maybe I can even make this even.
Look, it says fix it yourself, which is like indicative of.
Yeah, you had to fix it yourself because no one else would fix it for you in the US.
Hey,
oh, look at this.
Right there. PC speed.
So here's one thing. Here's AT speed. Here's one thing. This is what we're going to talk about today, but we'll get to that. There are no games. And what do we see at the local stores, Steve?
Oh, local software stores. There's Amiga games. There's still Commodore 64 games left. Or heck, you can probably even find an Apple IIe game if you look close enough.
But
most of it are blue tags that say IBM PC incompatible.
And what do we see in this magazine looking for games for our Atari ST?
We see it for $400, you can get this thing called AT Speed.
Right.
The IBM 286 emulator. Now, at the time, 286, I think the 386 had just come out.
Yeah.
But the 286, I mean, that was a 16-bit machine.
That was a good machine.
And I mean, we kind of made fun of it because most of the time the games didn't look very good. But about this time, they did start looking good.
They did. And one thing we didn't realize was that Tandy 1000 16-color graphics were pretty good. They weren't as good as the ST because I think there were only 16 total colors, but they could be emulated really simply on an Atari ST low-res screen.
Well, this AT speed, which I think we even saw it in this magazine here, because
yep.
I've been literally looking for the. It's so funny because this is just, we just set this up to look at this magazine. I've been looking for this ad for months. And here it is right here.
Yeah, it's right here.
Right, the first thing we look at.
Well, because this is what we
were
doing.
May 1991.
This is exactly what we were doing.
So we were going to college at the time, and we were just in our like information systems classes.
Right.
And realizing that quite possibly owning the ST was a detriment for college. Because a lot of software and stuff was coming out for the PC that we needed for school.
Right.
For example, our COBOL program that we needed. To run for school was a PC only COBOL program, and we're like, how do we do that? Like, how do we, you know, we're gonna have to go to the lab and stuff, and so we didn't want to buy a whole new computer.
No,
so we saw that ad and we thought it was
286 at this time in the DAC catalog was like $1,400, and we needed right. one. So what were we going to do? We did, and let's go back and share this.
We thought about this. We thought about this, but we didn't get it yet. But we did. We said, oh, my God, this is cool. They also have a thing called PC speed, which would give yourself a PC XT. But, I mean, a PC XT came out like 1981. Right. Who cares about that? But look at the AT speed. Supports VGA mono, which right. I didn't really know what that meant. EGA, Hercules mono, EGA mono, Hercules mono, Tandy 1000 16 color graphics. And that meant that any game that we could find at the software store that also supported Tandy 1000 16 color graphics, we could play.
Right. Yeah, and we did find some. And we would look through those stores for what were on them, what was on the boxes, and try and see if we'd be able to play it on this. I think we found enough that we said,
we'll get to that.
Let's upgrade our Atari ST.
Yeah, we did. We looked around and said, let's upgrade our Atari ST, because in this magazine, let's show how many interesting games for the Atari ST.
Okay, let's take a flip through here. Okay, so the first product that comes up is one that I think Secret of Monkey Island was actually being released for the Atari ST, which is a big deal. I think it took a long time for people to try and get Lucasfilm games to do it, too.
Mm-hmm. So that's one game.
Here's the latest earnings for Atari and Commodore. Let's look at this real quick. Atari corporate had a net income of barely over $3 million on $89 million of sales, and Commodore had $7 million on $200 million of sales. Neither one of them blowing the doors out, but Commodore doing twice as well. SimCity sweeps. So SimCity had been released. I remember getting this in January of 1991.
So SimCity, which is cool. So that's a couple games.
That's a good game. But we were seeing lots of software still out there for this. Commodore 64, IBM PC. And SimCity is a good game, but it's not. I mean, it was a great game, but there wasn't really a selection that you could get at the store at all. So here is, for the fun of it, section of Canisters, Clowns, Collisions, and Subconscious. I think this is Nightmare. Let me see.
No,
Anarchy. Right. Anarchy.
It's Weird Dreams. Anarchy is I thought it was Weird Dreams.
Oh, Anarchy. This is something else. So that's Weird Dreams. Here's Anarchy. It's like that Defender style game. So this is one game he's talking about. So here is Weird Dreams. Anarchy is a different game. It's a shoot 'em up. This is Clown-O-Mania, which I don't even remember seeing anywhere. I still haven't seen it anywhere. I gotta find that. There's Anarchy, which is Harmony, which is by Accolade, Accolade was still putting out some games for the Atari, but not many. Okay, here's Harmony by Accolade. I think this is just a weird game. Weird Dreams, our selection. Weird Dreams, Clown-O-Mania. And that's it. I mean, and looks like Anarchy was a pretty decent shoot 'em up, but where could
and
we find
Sin
this?
City and Let's Secret see. Of Monkey Island.
Psygnosis was in Maryland, so they did have in Massachusetts game. It was they would import them, but where could we find these, Steve?
I don't know.
IBM compatibility. Ooh, there's the box.
Wow.
This is still in our machine right now. Machine is falling apart.
Okay, so what happened is, so we see AT speed in this magazine.
Right.
And we're also noticing that there are no other games.
Right.
Now let me share with you what it was like going to the computer store when you weren't use it when you didn't have an ST at the time. Okay.
Yes. Let me. Okay. There. Let's see what we got here.
So by contrast,
that's cool.
When we started reading the computer magazines that we were reading, the Computer Gaming World and Video Games and Computer Entertainment, which were pretty much the ones that we read all the time.
Right.
The amount of just amazing looking role-playing games that were coming out at that time, that reading through Computer Gaming World and through Video Games and Computer Entertainment, which were the two American magazines we could find, on the other hand, that weren't the ST magazines, all of a sudden the most amazing set of role-playing games and other games
are
starting to be seen, right? So this is a space kind of combat role-playing adventure from New World Computing called Planet's Edge. I don't think we ever had this one, but it certainly was one of the games that made me want to I don't say wanted to get a PC, but made me sad that we couldn't, that the ST's games were drying up.
Yes, exactly.
Then this one, Might and Magic 3. Okay, I saw this and I'm like, oh my God, this looks like such an amazing game. Why can't we get anything like this on the ST? Yeah,
and they should have been able to do this on the ST.
It could have been. This is actually, the ST probably could have done most of what this did, but they weren't making it for the ST at the time. That's also New World Computing. These games, I know this sounds kind of stupid, but like a golf game that looked amazing, like amazing 3D golf game, like the one from Access, like we kind of drooled over these for some reason.
Leaderboard?
No, this is I think Lynx. This is Lynx. Leaderboard, I think is Accolade.
Yes, you're correct. And Lynx didn't.
And then Falcon, which I would never play because it did come out for the ST though. Yeah, but this came out and said it had 256 color graphics.
Yeah, and also actually, we could barely find it for the ST.
Not yet did it have 256 color graphics, but it will. That's the next step.
Right.
Okay, then this Ultima Martian Dreams, which I'm like, oh my God, a new Ultima game that will never come out for the Atari ST.
Right.
Pools of Darkness, so another SSI RPG advanced D&D game that was never going to come out for the ST. They did make one, but and this one in particular, if you can see, it says 256 color VGA.
And
I think we looked at 256 color VGA and we're like, oh my God, how could that even be?
I think Crime Wave, we saw one of those games that was that by...
I think I have that in here.
256 colors. I was like, oh my God, it wasn't very good looking, but still.
But I think here that the last one of this set is Interplay's Star Trek game. I don't even know if I wanted to play a Star Trek game, but I knew I wanted to play a game that had 256 colors. 3D digitized space action scenes. So my point is, and there's another one, another amazing looking SSI Buck Rogers RPG based on, I think, D&D rules. Again, only for the IBM and the Amiga. I mean, there's more games like I remember seeing Castles.
Yes.
Gunship.
Now, Castles was on the ST also. So was Falcon. But they were supposedly inferior versions.
But I never saw them. I never saw it.
I agree. We didn't know they existed.
In the summer 1991, we decide that AT speed is what we want to get. So why don't you go share that article about AT speed again? Let's see if we can find some pertinent stuff in there, data that looks interesting that we can edit.
AT speed? So I'm writing this review. This is probably why.
Yeah,
we had difficulty with word processors all the time. This guy said, I'm writing this review in WordPerfect 5.1 running under MS-DOS on his Mega 4 ST. Right away, we were probably blown away.
Right, because we're like, oh my God, on my ST, some of these games that we're now seeing available, we could play. And I know it seems like we're selling out, but like we're kind of desperate because no one ever bought us a computer or anything after dad bought us one when we were 13, right? 1983. Right. Everything else we ever got, we had to buy ourselves. We had to sell our equipment to get new equipment, to trade up, to sell our equipment, to get new equipment. And if we were going to make the decision to go to get an IBM computer, it was a big decision. So to do that, we had to have a really good reason. And to see that there was a device called AT Speed, and why don't you explain what it did, Jeff, like how it worked?
So AT Speed was a hardware device that went in your Atari ST, and you could hook up
You could hook up a disk drive to it, like a 5 1/4-inch disk drive to it, to your computer, and then you ran software on in TOS that would allow you to suddenly be emulating in AT speed. It would you suddenly switch to the AT speed hardware, and you could load disks off of it.
Yeah, so it was literally a 286. It was a 286 with a DOS compatibility built in, or no? I mean, so the DOS disk we had to get.
You had to get DOS disks.
It could load a DOS disk, and then you could load games from it.
Right.
And we were kind of like questioning whether it would actually work or not.
It worked great.
It used the keyboard, power supply, all the ports,
mouse
from the ST,
joysticks for the ST if they worked.
It was compatible with most of that stuff. And then we went back to the store, and we found some games to play.
We did. I'm going to read this part because this is probably why we wanted it, okay?
Right.
It says, meets my needs, okay? These articles were pretty good in Antic always because they really got down to brass tacks. Mm-hmm. It was like, I purchased AT Speed to run WordPerfect. We needed something like that for school. We did not have a good word processor on the SD, although they existed. But since it didn't support Ovoletti graphics, I'm forced to run it in either two-color CGA or off Hercules. We didn't know what that meant. No. The only application that's crashed is WordPerfect 3.0 editor because it's too much memory. Basically, it said Windows 3.0 runs. Microsoft Flight Simulator runs complete with sound, but since it doesn't support Ovoletti graphics, I'm forced to run it in CGA. But it runs games. That was basically all we needed to know.
That's it. Especially I thought Flight Simulator is so complicated and it can play it. That must mean that it works.
And then it says it's easy to boot. You can boot off a hard drive. We didn't have one. But one thing is here. If you're willing to modify your hardware, which we were, AT Speed also emulates the Ovoletti graphics card AT&T 6000. We didn't know what that was, but this is what we wanted. This card has a resolution of 640 by 400, exactly the same as the ST's monochrome display, and then major PC applications, Windows Gem and WordPerfect, all would work with this card, and the ST could support it. And mouse is supported. We're all, wait a minute, this is the only things that we can't afford a $2,000 PC. This is going to solve our problems right now. Us doing the foo-foo whatever version of what we could do to get things to work.
it was always the not quite correct version of something. Does it say anything here about the graphics modes it supports?
Because the AT Speed supports 80 column by 24 color, emulates CGA and Tandy 21,000 graphics on color ST monitors, on monochrome monitors. You can do Hercules and like the Ovoletti monochrome. So we knew that it could do some CGA.
I swear it also emulated EGA, but I may be wrong.
EGA. It would do EGA 16 colors, but EGA 16 had two modes, a 640 by 200, which only had four colors on the ST, but a 320 by 200. Kind of like the Tandy mode. So that one, if games were in that low resolution 16 color Tandy mode, it would work great. Or the EGA 16 color.
So AT Speed was kind of for about 9 months was an absolute revelation.
Yeah.
Let me share you the game. So I know. So then the idea was, I remember the first day, so we get AT Speed, it works, and that same day we went down to the B. Dalton Software, etc., which is like at the mall down the street, and we went to the IBM section with the blue tags, the blue circles on everything, to see what games we could get. But we still didn't have much money, so we had to make sure they were on 5.5-inch discs, they didn't require more memory or anything special, right? Did it emulate some sound? I don't know. Might it sound? Was it? Wasn't it something?
It wasn't. It would only emulate the chip. The
AdLib.
Not even AdLib would only emulate the clicky IBM clicky sounds.
I remember there being more sound than that, but I'm probably wrong. It probably just was the speaker sound. It didn't matter. So we went down to B. Dalton, and I remember being because they had a wall of IBM software, and most of it to me just looked like amazing role playing games. They weren't all, but that's what I wanted. I was so kind of just wanted a great game to play, and so I remember picking up, and I don't know the timing, but I have all the games that we bought, and I'll share them with you. So I remember it vividly. Yeah, so I'm going to show you this. So I know this isn't the best display, and hopefully we'll augment this with some actual video or something. Okay, so the first game I found was Fountain of Dreams, which worked in Tandy 1000, and Fountain of Dreams was a role-playing game that was the sequel to Wasteland.
Oh, yes.
I think it even said it on the box. Now, hardly anybody remembers Fountain of Dreams, and it wasn't a great role-playing game. I kept dying of disease or something because you were trying to get like to the Fountain of Youth or something, and it was really, really hard. Then Dragon Wars.
But what's one thing about Fountain of Dreams that you mentioned? It worked in Tandy or CGA. That's
what I said at the beginning. It worked in Tandy. Anyway, yes. Dragon Wars was another game that worked in Tandy 1000. And I remember playing, it was just kind of like in the vein of Bard's Tale. It was a neat role-playing game. I think I didn't get very far, but it was cool. But my favorite one was BattleTech: The Crescent's Hot Inception, which I played. Is by Infocom, made this, and you said that there's an ST version.
Yeah,
I don't think we ever found it.
Look at the front of the box, Steve.
It says ST on it,
right? Because it we never found the ST version, but this is the ST version, right?
This is the ST version. We never found it.
Which is the irony. It basically, that tells the entire story right there.
By the way, look who it's by Westwood Associates too, which is the people made Command and Conquer,
of course.
Dune 2 and Command and Conquer. BattleTech is a. I finished this game, and I say that only lightly because I didn't finish a lot of games at the time. I played all the way through this. I played an IBM PC game on my Atari ST all the way through because I was so excited to be able to play a different sort of RPG.
Be able to go and find games at the local shop, which was a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, it was fun. Then Final Orbit, I know this was a little action game that you loved.
I loved it. It ran in low-res EGA.
I think I still have the discs. And then a couple other, we could play all of these games.
Oh, man, we got a bunch of these.
Card Sharks, Price is Right. I think we had a Jeopardy, a few. But I still love these.
The cool thing about them was it was four-color CGA animation, but the animation was really good.
Yeah, it was really, and it's they were simple, but just kind of really fun to play. And I think what happened with these games, I think these game show games were maybe $10 a piece. I don't know. These were the other games were probably between $14.99 and $19.99. They weren't really expensive.
No, they weren't. They were cheap. They had some cheap games.
They were cheap because they were a couple years old. And so we played these probably from summer 1991 to somewhere like December 1991.
And then we bought finally got a machine. Databyte Systems sold us a $1,400 386.
Let me show you what the rest of the games look like as the year went on, okay? All right, so Matrix Cubed, which we were really excited about.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever got it. Eye of the Beholder 2, which I couldn't believe, because I'm like, oh my God, this looks like Dungeon Master, but that much better. It wasn't really better, but it certainly looked
256 colors, though.
256 colors. All of these you'll see, most you'll see 256 colors. This one I know you wanted badly, this Road to the Final Four by Bethesda.
I probably never played it.
We bought it. I think it may have been too complicated or something, or wasn't really what you wanted.
Yeah.
Look at this. Okay, so Computer Games Plus was the store that we would go to all the time. We would drive to get our imported ST games. But if you look at this ad for Computer Games Plus, there's almost no imported games anymore. This is literally all Genesis, Electronic Arts, NES. They had totally moved into the area of not importing games. So our source for games was sort of gone anyway.
It was pretty much drying up.
Yeah, it was drying up. So there's nothing we could do except get AT Speed and try to do something.
Yes. And there was a problem. More,
if you remember Mega Fortress, which was another flight simulator that was I remember just drooling over it, even though I don't think we ever got it. Wizardry, Crusaders of the Dark Savant, another Tomb of Fitzgerald's Color game.
I think we were I was always intrigued by Wizardry because it only came out on the Apple and maybe on the Commodore 64 a little bit.
Well, this is an IBM, obviously, because that what this is. Then here is another amazing looking SSI game, right? Even though I don't know if it's actually that good, but it certainly is.
Shadow Sorcerer came out on the ST. We just couldn't find it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a 3D RPG. It was sort of a let me see if it was. It was an isometric 3D RPG.
Yeah, isometric 3D game. So Bard's Tale Construction Set, which to me was like, oh my god, I want Bard's Tale Construction Set. Oh, sorry, full VGA graphics can only play on IBM PC.
Right.
And then another one that was over the top, Wing Commander and Wing Commander 2, which are just incredible.
I think Wing Commander came out on like 1,000 discs or something like that, but still. Yeah. And Dynamics, Castles. Which was Dynamics. Oh, sorry, you don't have that on. I remember that we were seeing games by like Sierra Dynamics that you could only get on the PC. May have come out on the Amiga at some point, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, no way. Castles, which we said before, we had an ST version, but we couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Gunship 2000, Mega Traveler, and Twilight 2000, which I remember getting Twilight 2000. It was a really amazing game for the time that it came out. Leisure Suit Larry coming out on the PC, which we played on the 8-bit, right, as soft porn adventure, but this is...
So Mega Traveler came out on the ST, too. I just want to say, Mega Traveler came out on the ST also. It's just games that, like, we should have been able to find for the ST, but they weren't even available.
Yeah, we couldn't find them anywhere. No one carried them.
Yeah.
256 Color VGA, Leisure Suit Larry. It didn't, and I got to say, even though it came on the ST, the fact that there's a 256 Color...
You're right.
Mode in VGA kind of overshadowed everything. Magic Candle is one of those games sat on the shelf that I couldn't wait to play, even though when I finally played it, it wasn't that great. But I remember wanting to play it because it was an amazing looking RPG that we couldn't get. Tony La Russa's Ultimate Baseball, I put here only because it was a fantastic looking baseball game.
I would have SSI. Wanted that, yeah, for sure.
F1 17A, Cell Fighter. More Mega Traveler, Ultima 7, The Black Gate.
Oh.
They hadn't been I think the last one was Ultima 5. Maybe 6 came out.
I think 6 might have come out.
6, there's a prototype, I think. I don't think it actually came out.
Let's see. Ultima 5. Ultima 5 was the last one that
last
came out.
Last one. 6, they kind of started but never got done.
Oh, 6. The False Prophet.
Yeah, but I think it's only a demo, I think.
No, right? Let me see. Maybe you're correct. Download, it says, no, it has a box and instructions and everything. So it
does? Okay.
But not 7, for sure.
I thought it couldn't be played. But anyway, I may be wrong. Okay. Civilization, Elite Plus, Strike Commander, which is, you know, the next...
Yeah.
The next in the Wing Commander, which actually was kind of a weird game, but Secret of Monkey Island 2.
Yeah,
so we
never.
Just saw the IBM one came out. I mean, the ST came out the first one.
Yep.
And here's the second one coming out on the PC, which would never come out on the ST. Indiana Jones, The Fate of Atlantis, which might have come out on the ST.
Let me look it up. I think it did, because these were just using, The Fate of Atlantis did come out. It was like the final game by them on the ST, pretty much.
Here's the one you were talking about. Oh, Lost in LA. I don't remember this by Alkalade. So,
You
know, a less manly game. You know? and we were like, and then okay, how about this?
The
Sound Blaster Pro.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the features of Sound Blaster Pro and going, oh my god, like this is looks so much better than the ST. I mean, not knowing how much it would cost to get a VGA card and a Soundblaster Pro is almost as much as an ST. Again, here's this weird Disney Rocketeer. And actually, at the time, Disney was making their own sound card. You see the sound thing at the bottom?
Yeah, they're
so weird.
They hadn't really standardized yet on the
Android. Another SSI Civil War game, which I just always wanted. Willie Beamish. I wanted this so bad. Disney's Animation Studio, because we were doing animation with a couple different programs. One was
Cyber Studio and Cyber Paint.
One was Cyber Paint, but there was another one, a 2D animation program that I was using as well.
That had tweens and everything. It was great on the ST. Yeah.
Darklands, which is a really amazingly weird, like, RPG set in, like, ancient Germany. Ultima Underworld as well, Dungeons and Abyss, like a fully 3D game. And then here's the ad for AT Speed.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about, we got it, but what were some of the problems right away when we first, so we got AT Speed and we're raising an ST, so we still have the ST and we want to move to a full IBM PC because it's the only way forward in our area. When you get one, there's little things that we didn't even realize were going to be a problem.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. So then we have our ST through January 1992. We save up all of our money, and then we go look for an IBM PC, and we try to decide what do we want. There's a 386 SX16. There's a 486 16, and 486 DX233. And a 386 DX40. Those are the choices of chips.
And I'm pretty sure the DX40 was by Cyrix or something. It wasn't.
It was an AMD.
It was AMD. Okay.
It could have been Cyrix.
I think it's Cyrix.
But it was not a standard. It was not an Intel, the DX40. It was like an overclocked 386.
AMD. So AMD, yeah, AMD was. Okay. It wasn't Cyrix.
So we chose a 386 DX40, which served our purposes very well. So, first of all, we had to find a place to build one, right?
Right.
So at the time, it was, you know, we were so used to going and getting our package Atari ST, you got the software, all that, you know. Now you had to go and basically talk to a guy at a store and tell him what you wanted, and then like a week later they would have the machine built for you.
And I think I do have that invoice somewhere from when we got the DX4 created. I will, awesome. I will get it. But let's not go there yet, because that's for another podcast. But I just wanted to say one thing about it: the S using the ST as a medium for the IBM PC, the 286, offered us this bridge. But when you get to a full DOS system with only Windows 3.1 and configurations and things, you learn that your ST and your Amiga was just this incredible environment that was great for games, and we scrambled
and tried to make like Windows 3.0 and DOS into the environment that we loved with the ST. But like, you know, we just weren't used to things like having to like use the memory manager to move stuff around so you could play a particular game. Like that just wasn't a thing we had to do. Like it went from the computer being slick and exciting, and you went to the store. It's almost like a gaming console with the ability to break down into programming it, right? With like STOS, into like this clunky do-it-yourself, very like everything I hated about computers was all rolled into one. And it's like, this is what we have to do now.
Right. No, it became sort of something we liked. It became something we liked, but if the ST was selling billions of pieces of software here, or the Amiga, or there was a new ST Falcon that we could buy and everything was working, we would have gone with that. We only went here because we were forced to. And
Falcon did not come out. I think Falcon trickled out here in like 1992 or 3.
Yeah, it was way late.
A few at the music stores, and they were ridiculously expensive.
Eventually, we would come, especially with Windows 95. It came to the place where this machine rocked, and when we got our first CD-ROM drive. We'll get to those things.
Okay, so that was pretty interesting, right? The whole AT Speed thing?
AT Speed, and you know what? They had an AT Speed for the Amiga. They also had the Mac that you could make turn your ST into.
There's also PC Ditto, which was a software-only like version.
PC Ditto. There are just all these things at the time that was like, okay, take your current 16-bit computer ST and Amiga people and make it work like another computer so we can keep working.
Because nobody really wanted to go PC. Everybody loved...
Yeah, I mean, we all dreaded going to PC, but we had to. Eventually, you know, well, we talked about it, but eventually when Windows 98 came out, it finally made it okay, like it was a decent environment.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, let's and then to respond to one more thing, just to respond. So they talked a little bit about this on This Week in Retro last week or last week, where they talked about whether Wolfenstein 3D or what game made you want to go to the PC. And they were talking about how it wasn't really Wolfenstein 3D, it was Doom. But I say 100% it was Wolfenstein 3D for us.
Wolfenstein 3D for sure.
I mean, it was all the games that were in the video show, but like Wolfenstein 3D is the game that I saw and I'm like, there's no way you could do that any other way. Not possible.
That just blew me away too. And the way, in Wolfenstein 3D at the time, there was still, when we got Wolfenstein 3D, there still was no real good place to pick up shareware. There was a guy at the B. Dalton who always saw us coming in looking for action games, and he gave us a disc of it and said, awesome. Play this. And then that's how we figured out that we finally had a game that was better than our Atari ST.
I mean, there was another, and we should probably do some episodes on the PC era, but the early PC era, when we wanted to find games, shareware games, like good action games and stuff, I remember Dad wanted to go buy himself a filing cabinet, and we ended up at some sort of office store, not like Staples or anything, but like just some sort of off-brand office store that had one of those disc trees. And in that disc tree, we found, I think, Jill the Jungle and
Caverns of Kraws.
Yeah. All kinds of great shareware games on that disc tree, but for another time.
Another time. PC, well, that's all in the overscan and in the vertical blank, early PC stuff.
That's right.
So we'll get there. So, we'll talk about that a lot more.
Are you ready, Jeff? Out of the overscan.
And into the vertical blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.